Hello, I'm Glyn Perkins, and welcome back to episode 2 of HR Untethered, navigating HR realities with Lisa Kay. In our first episode, we discussed how significant shifts in the way companies operate have created in their wake a new set of challenges for managers, particularly in the area of human resource management. We looked generally at the impacts of the game changer COVID-19, which in addition to changing how businesses operate, also changed the expectation and experience of employees. In this episode, we move from an overview of what is happening generally in the area of human resource management to addressing very specific issues that businesses are facing. Since our last discussion, we've been receiving questions submitted to us by managers who are coming up against challenges in their attempts to create, maintain, or re-establish a highly motivated and engaged workforce. We thought it would be useful to address some of the most asked questions because clearly some of our listeners are having similar experiences and some issues are becoming more common. To answer these questions, I'm once again joined by Lisa Kay from Peak Performance HR. Lisa, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Clearly, your insight struck a chord last time out because this podcast has generated quite a response. But before we get to the questions, for our first-time listeners, could we start with you telling us about yourself and Peak Performance HR?
Yeah, absolutely. So I founded Peak Performance HR about 13 years ago now, going to be 13 years, when I recognized a need in the work environment where small businesses just weren't getting the expertise in HR that some of their larger counterparts, the larger organizations, had internally. And so I decided to start consulting and providing HR services to small, mid-sized businesses in particular to ensure that they have the support and the guidance in terms of HR compliance and policy and initiatives to help their business grow and succeed as well.
For the smaller business, for the entrepreneurs, I guess that this is something that wouldn't be front center of mind HR. There's the setting up this business, there's the financial consideration, then there's the hiring. But once you have a team of staff, how do you handle them?
Well, that's actually a really good question and a good point, because you're right. I've had clients who've called me, they've been in business for 40 years and they've never had HR. So they've managed without, and kudos to them. If they haven't gotten themselves in hot water, that's great. And if their business has gone well, then that's wonderful as well. But on the other side of that, we do have many clients who are in startup mode, who don't even have employees yet and who are trying to be proactive, recognizing that today's workplace is a very different place than it had been previously. So it's more important probably than ever to have some HR guidance to ensure that some of the policies and compliance pieces are set up before we start bringing on staff, just to make sure that there's less liability and risk as you move forward.
Especially coming out of COVID, we know people were let go. They've decided that this would be the best time to start their own business. So definitely the information that you have is going to be very useful for them. Lisa, let's turn to the questions submitted by listeners. The first is from Dr. Nadine, who manages a clinic. She asks, "We have very busy times, and I find that some employees consistently book time off during this period, putting patients and their colleagues at a disadvantage. Can I institute a policy that vacations cannot be taken during these times?"
Yeah, that's a great question. And so that's where having the policies set out and expectations being clear on both sides, for both the employer and the employee, what the vacation policy looks like, how it's structured, what is allowed and what isn't allowed, so that employees are not requesting time off during the busiest periods of the year. And also ensuring that there is an approval process and that it's not just assumed that vacation requests are granted. So, you know, having a very detailed vacation policy outlining not only how much time employees are entitled to, but when they can take that time, what the approval process is, how far in advance do you need to make those requests, when do they need to be approved, what happens if it's extenuating circumstances. Obviously, just because you have a policy doesn't mean you can't make an exception to that policy if the circumstances warrant it, but otherwise employees are clear on what the policy is and what's acceptable and what is not.
Some of the places that I've worked at in the past, one was seniority. It went by seniority. But the second one was also a time frame that you were given a period of time to submit your vacation. If you submitted it after that, then you're last. You get whatever's left over.
Oh, that's interesting. So, I mean, there are all sorts of different ways. I haven't heard of seniority other than in a more unionized environment. So I haven't heard that lately. But certainly there's a request period. Some companies say we want to have your vacation requests in at the beginning of the year so they can plan the year accordingly. Some might say it's first come, first serve. So, you know, employees are rushing at the beginning of the year to submit requests, especially over the Christmas holidays or the New Year's. So those are some of the structures that are in place. It really depends on the workplace and what works best for people. These days, of course, with hybrid work environments, there's a little bit more flexibility as well. So vacation time is viewed a little bit differently because you have a little bit more flexibility in your day to get certain things done when you need to. But ultimately, yes, it just does come down to a good vacation policy that suits the business.
And with that, it's also the employees. Knowing that at Christmas time, a lot of people will want it off certain time during the summer months, June, July, August, there will be weeks when vacation time won't be available.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that, again, if you know coming into a position, into a role with a company that is their vacation policy, then you're less likely to be frustrated with it at the time. I mean, you might still end up frustrated with it, but at least the expectation was clear. No one can tell you, or you can't say that no one told you, is what I'm trying to say.
Dr. Nadine also asks, how do I address employees who are often sick and max out their allotted sick days?
Yeah, and so that's also a very popular question in my practice because, first of all, some companies don't even offer sick days, and even if they do, it's easy to max them out. But the truth is that you have to, A, have a sick policy, and secondly, consider each case on its own. So does this feel legitimate? Are all of the sick days that somebody's requesting on a Friday or a Monday, for example? And if they are, you might start questioning the legitimacy of those sick days. So if you start noticing trends on Fridays and Mondays, you might start beginning to consider that a performance issue more than a sick day issue. So you would want to address that as performance and have conversations around why are you taking off every Friday or every Monday? and we've seen a pattern here, and start documenting that as performance. Beyond that, depending on what your sick policy entails, you know, I know it's become slightly unpopular to ask for doctor's notes, but perhaps it's after a period of time. If they're missing a certain number of days or a certain number of times per month, there should be some kind of validation that the sick day is warranted. So you don't need a diagnosis, but just some kind of verification from a medical doctor to indicate that it is legitimate if you see that it's becoming a frequent situation.
Part of your response has surprised me, and it's great that we're having this conversation because while we do, I'm learning as we go along. Great. You just mentioned some companies don't offer sick days. I, in my mind, thought it was a legality that they had to.
Sick days, yes, but not paid sick days necessarily. So there's a requirement to have a certain number of days that you can take off that's unpaid. But if you're offering employees paid sick days, not all companies do that.
That's good to know. Dr. Nadine also asks, how do I manage a group of employees who are not cohesive?
Yeah, I mean, that is a tough question. You know, that is one of our biggest HR challenges in terms of managing an employee base that's not cohesive, or how do you create the culture that you want, right? If there's conflict in the workplace, it should always be addressed. So don't try to sweep it under the rug is my first recommendation. You got to face it head on. So whether that means meeting with the employees separately, meeting with them together, depending on how many employees are involved, maybe you have a group meeting, a town hall even, to address some of the issues that are going on in the workplace. You may want to do this publicly. You might want to hire a consultant like me or my team to come in and facilitate focus groups to gather feedback. You need to understand what the root cause of the conflict is. And hopefully, once you understand that, you could address it. There is a possibility that people just don't like each other. You know, some people just don't like each other and they're just not going to get along. And that's the reality of the world. And what I usually tell people in that situation is you don't have to like the person. You just have to work with them. So you need to be able to put aside some of whatever personality issues that annoy you or frustrate you. You have to put that aside and just get your work done and be productive. And so you don't have to like them. You don't have to be their best friend, but you just need to work with them.
When you walk through the door, it's being professional.
Exactly.
And having that cohesiveness is, to me, so important. And I know we use the phrase family. It's like a family here at the office, and it's a little cliche. But some companies are like that, where you do have that family dynamic, but then there's that new hire and how they fit into that.
Yeah. And the family dynamic, I'll be honest, I see it less and less these days. It's probably a result of many different factors, generational differences, remote working. You know, there's all sorts of things that can contribute to a lack of cohesiveness. You're right. A new employee comes in and kind of shakes it up a little bit, and so it could change the dynamic. But ultimately, the goal for the organization is the same. So focusing on the objectives of the organization, what are those goals that we need to achieve together, and ensuring people are clear about how they're being measured and their performance is being evaluated, and how they need to work together to make that happen. But really, the cohesive question, there's so many different ways of tackling it, and there could be so many different reasons for it to begin with. It's a difficult question to answer sort of in a podcast, but each situation should be addressed on its own. Those are just a few examples of some of the ways we might tackle that.
Lisa, our next question is from Rose, who runs a destination spa. And she says, does having a outside company screen applicants save time? And is there any sense that this approach works in having better long-term hires?
So full disclosure, of course, my firm offers this service, so I suppose I do have a vested interest in the way I respond to it, but I will try to be objective here. Certainly having an outside firm can be helpful. First of all, it takes the initial screening off of your plate, leaving you to do what you need to do for your own business. As you probably know, if you've ever done any hiring, once you've posted a position, the volume of resumes that comes in can be overwhelming sometimes and very time consuming. So having an outside firm who understands what the criteria is, what you're looking for, and being able to shortlist top candidates to present to you for your consideration can be a huge benefit. I think it's important, though, in looking and hiring an outside firm to make sure that they're a good fit for you as well. There are a lot of different types of employment agencies out there. There are a lot of different types of recruiters out there. Some are better than others, and some will be the right fit for certain organizations better than others. I just want employers to think about the fact that you want whoever you're working with to have an appreciation not only of what the criteria of the job is, but also what the culture of the company is, who's going to be a good fit, not just a matter of what's written on their resume, because that is only a portion of what makes a candidate successful in a role, right? So having the hard skills to do the job is only a small part of it. Being able to integrate well and fit into the team is another huge component. So working with somebody externally who understands your business, understands your culture, is really important.
And we know that with the resume, what you get isn't always what is written down on the resume.
And that's true, too. So sometimes employers, just because they're pressed for time, they may not go through the process as thoroughly. They may not ask the right questions. They may not follow through with the proper screening and assessments and references, where if you engage with an outside firm, they may have access to those things. They may have access to testing for, you know, computer skills, or they may have access to testing for soft skills that you otherwise wouldn't benefit from. There's also new technologies out there that allow employers to assess fit. And those are some great tools that, again, unless you're familiar with them, you may not think to use them, but ultimately they can improve the quality of the hire that you bring in.
Rose also wants to know, how do I know when bringing in an outside firm is what I need to do?
Well, again, so that is a personal decision. You know, if you have a volume of recruitment that warrants having a full-time or even a part-time employee who you can hire to take on that role for you, that might make sense. But if your recruitment is less frequent, or a lot of the roles that you're hiring for example, are the same. If you have a call center and you need to hire 10 customer service agents, it might make sense from a time cost perspective just to bring on an external agency to assist you with that type of recruitment, because of just the administration involved in scheduling interviews and conducting interviews and who's working out and who's not working out and who's, you know, going through the process. So at the end of the day, you know, you just decide whether the volume of recruitment, how much you're hiring, and what type of roles you're hiring for as well, will help you determine whether it makes sense. Again, if there are easier roles to fill, administrative roles, accounting, some of the typical roles that you might see, those are a little easier than some of the more complex positions. For example, in an engineering firm where it's very specific skill set, you have to go to market, and it's sort of a very specific search. And in that case, again, you might want somebody external who's going to devote their time to that.
On today's episode of HR Untethered, Lisa Kay from Peak Performance HR is answering your questions. Lisa, the next question is from Roger. He operates a security firm, and he would like to know, he says that he's had to let an employee go because of client complaints, which upon investigation were found to be valid. They agreed to a settlement but never actually signed off and now have reached out to the labor board. I believe we will be successful in this process, but in the meantime, they have been contacting current employees to air their grievances. We've asked that they stop through our lawyer, but it continues. How do I address this with current employees?
Yeah, and that's a tough one, because if they're not adhering to any legal obligations contractually that you probably had included, hopefully you had included in your termination and or even within your employment agreement initially, it's hard to control what other people choose to do. So if they're reaching out to your employees and making comments and, saying things that may or not be true, ultimately, you don't want that happening, but it is difficult to stop it. So really the best thing to do is to address it directly with employees, making the request of your employees to keep in mind, A, any obligations they may have through their employment agreement as well. But really on a personal note, just giving them perhaps a little bit of background, obviously not sharing the confidential aspects of what's going on or what had transpired with the investigation, why that person is no longer with you, is not important. Really, it's, we don't want you communicating with this person. If they contact you, please do not engage. And having that conversation directly with employees. That's probably the most effective way, and also gives those employees perhaps an opportunity to ask questions, some of which you might be able to answer for them, giving them some perspective on where you're at in the process. And ultimately, hopefully, the legal proceedings will take care of the rest.
And depending on how long the employees have worked together, they may already know that this has been happening, because if there have been several complaints, as Roger has indicated in his statement, this isn't something that's new that's just popped up overnight.
Yeah, I mean, you do find that often, that employees are often aware of what's happening beneath the surface. And so if there were complaints, they're probably aware of some of these things. There was talk in the shop before this happened, right? So they can probably appreciate, as the employer, why you don't want them spreading rumors. You don't want them listening to this person, regardless of what they're saying. You know, it's best to cut contact. I mean, obviously, if they're friends outside of the workplace, you won't have the option. There's certain things that you can't control. But whatever you can do internally, just to educate people, just to let them know, this is what's happening, again, without sharing all the details, but just enough on a need-to-know basis, we would appreciate if you just do not engage in these conversations. And most people, I think, that do respect that.
It comes down to communications.
Exactly.
Lisa, the final question for today is from Jennifer. She's the CEO of an audio production company that works entirely remotely. She says, I have employees who are part of the gig economy. They come to us when I have work that matches their skill set, and when they are not with us, they work for many other companies. This is not one or two within my workforce, but rather the majority. The work we do is customized and often requires knowledge of an industry, so some employees are with us for only a few weeks of the year, while others are there more often. It depends on what we sell. How do I keep them engaged?
What a great question. And it's one that's close to my heart, because my business is structured in a similar way where everybody is remote as well. So, you know, I can appreciate how difficult it is to keep people engaged. And back to the discussion about cohesiveness, how do you build a team when people don't get to pass each other in the office, who don't get to stand at the water cooler and chit-chat? It is difficult. And the best advice I can provide is, first of all, keeping everybody in the loop and communicating as often as possible about everything that has to do with the business. Successes, you know, celebrating successes, chatting about things that didn't go according to plan, just keeping people in the loop as to what's working, what isn't working within the business. Regular communications, helps people feel a part of it. So even if those contractors or, you know, the gig workers are not there on a constant basis, they are still receiving messages, emails, texts, just keeping them up to speed in terms of what's happening within the business, new projects, what's completed, etc. That's one of the things I would recommend. And of course, any opportunity to socialize. I suppose it's a bit stereotypical of HR to recommend this, but really having an opportunity to meet outside of work and to socialize outside of work also helps to build relationships, to build trust, familiarity, and makes people want to get together and to help one another. So as time goes on, if some people aren't there for a particular project but need to be brought in later on, once they come back, they instantly feel a part of the team because they already know the other folks. They've already had an opportunity to chat, get to know each other, and are more likely to pick up and be engaged at that point.
Some places that I've worked at have introduced team building exercises, which I'm all for the team, but I'm not for the exercises. But I must admit that once I'm there, once I'm engaged with my colleagues and some who I've met for the first time, I do find the conversation easier, especially when we're tackling issues at the office.
Yeah, and listen, those team building exercises, to some are a lot of fun, to other people outside of their comfort zone. But really, it doesn't have to be a formal team building exercise even. Really, just getting together for an evening, you know, of appetizers and drinks or whatever. It's just an opportunity to socialize.
Team building, wine, and appetizers, that I'm on board for that. Thank you, Lisa, again for sharing your experiences and understanding of managing human resources. That's a wrap for this edition, and I thank you for listening. If you missed any part of this podcast or want to hear it again, you can access this and all episodes of HR Untethered, Navigating HR Realities with Lisa Kay, wherever you find your favorite podcasts, including Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, Google, and many others. And if you would like to reach out to Lisa Kay to learn more about how peak performance HR can help your business, Lisa, what's the best way for people to contact you?
They can contact me through our website at www.peakperformancehr.ca. It's P-E-A-K, performancehr.ca. There you'll find a contact form. You can reach out through that contact form or by phone or email, and I'd be happy to chat.
I'm Glyn Perkins, and this is HR Untethered.